really want something good to happen, to have some good fortune in our life, some good circumstance that gives us something that we want or alleviates some kind of problem. And it's really wonderful when we get these things. And it's also good to keep in mind that if I get these things and I rejoice and it's only for my own benefit, then it's really rather useless. Yeah, I mean, not totally useless, because one sentient being benefits. But much better would be when we have some good fortune, if we share it with those around us. And even if we can't directly share it with different people or different sentient beings, to have the wish to share, the wish that whatever good fortune we have is spread out to all sentient beings, that it goes and affects others in one way or another, and that they can benefit as well. So just having that constant attitude in our mind of, whatever goodness I receive, may it be shared with everybody. And whatever difficulties come my way, may I take on the difficulties of others. And just having that thought in our mind changes our mind a lot, changes our whole purpose in life. And even though it just starts out as a thought, by the power of familiarization, then when actual opportunities appear to be of direct benefit, there's no hesitation or lack of compassion in our mind. And we very easily extend ourselves to others. So this comes about through the force of habituation, practicing, putting everything within the context of being of benefit and service to others. So the same with this teaching. May we benefit, and by our benefiting, may it have a positive impact on others, and may all sentient beings have the opportunity to listen to the Buddha's teachings in a place where they are safe, where they have good conditions, where they feel content and satisfied. Kind of motivation that's striving for full awakening, because we really want to benefit sentient beings, then let's share the Dharma this evening. Wanting to to be of benefit. Not just at the level of mouth. Level of mouth is easy, although sometimes it's hard. But actually doing something is, when we can, is really good. Okay. So, this is our third week working on the 10 non-virtues, right? We did the first three in the first week. So killing, stealing, unwise and unkind sexual behavior. Last week we did the first two, lying and divisive speech, or creating disharmony with our speech. So those are the first two of the speech ones. So of the four speech ones, lying is the most serious, creating disharmony is the next most serious. Then harsh words. Okay? So harsh words, boy, these are, sometimes I think with the speech ones, like, which one is the most common? Which one do you do the most between lying, creating disharmony, harsh words, and idle talk?
Idle
talk. How many people do idle talk the most? How many people do harsh words? How about divisive words? How about lying? They come very easily, don't they? Just open our mouth and out they come. We don't have to sit there and, cultivate the motivation with it's not like generating bodhicitta, there's the two methods. You have to sin. I've got to eat, first of all, equanimity for sin. You've got to think about it, look at it this way and that way. Finally a little bit comes. Was any of these ones a speech? Automatic. Open the mouth and it comes out like Chatty Cathy, Isn't it? We don't have to sit and cultivate a motivation. Or at least I don't. Maybe some of you do. The four, non-virtuous ones, boy. So harsh words and abusive language. Okay, so this includes criticizing other people, humiliating them in public, shaming them in private or in public, blaming them for things that they did or didn't do, picking on them, making fun of them, being sarcastic at their expense, cracking jokes that are meant to hurt them, insulting them, ridiculing them, swearing, and in general, doing whatever hurts others' feelings. So how often do you do this one? How many times a day? Do you ever go one day without this one?
In retreat.
What about in your mind?
Yeah, internally.
What about in your mind? Not planning one of these out, or not, regretting that that you missed an opportunity to speak harsh words to somebody. Maybe in retreat you really regret that. Boy, I had the chance to really get even, and I missed. Okay, so this one, the object is a sentient being who is hurt by our words. The heaviest is abusing our spiritual mentors. I think this one doesn't apply just to people, it can be to animals too. Yeah, because by the tone of our voice, you know, animals can pick up what, you know, what our intention is. Okay, then the second one, the second of the four parts is the action. So first of all, to recognize the person that we want to hurt. So you can see how this one's different from divisive words. You know, divisive words, you're most likely speaking to somebody else about this person to divide those two people. This one, you're speaking to that person, telling them what's wrong with them, which is everything. Yeah. And as a very interesting, especially, who do we, it is talking about the worst one here, is the heaviest, is our spiritual teacher, but who do we speak harsh words the most often to?
Those we're close to.
The people we're close to, isn't it? Yeah? Who do we blow up at and scream and yell, call names? Who do we have our temper tantrums with? Yeah, I should have put temper tantrums in here. Temper tantrums, very good thing of harsh speech, isn't it? Yeah. Or sometimes we don't even talk to them. We just shut down, won't communicate, withdraw. Yeah. It happens mostly with the people we care about, doesn't it? Kind of interesting, isn't it? The people we care about the most are the people we insult, abuse, pick on, blame, humiliate, criticize, shame, embarrass the most. What's going on? Yeah. Why is that? Okay, so why do you think that is? Why does it happen so much? Yeah.
I think we have different expectations for the people closest to us, and then when they're not met, we're significantly more upset.
Yeah. So we have a lot of expectations with those people, and those expectations are based on attachment, aren't they? And so when those expectations aren't met, our attachment is, you know, like a bubble that's, you know, exploded. Yeah. You aren't acting the way I thought you should act. You aren't being who I want you to be. Then we get quite upset. And of course we blame them. But what's so interesting about our strategy is we think that the harsher we speak to them, the more they will want to change. Yeah? So, I mean, this whole thing of harsh words, I mean, when you look at it, we speak the worst to the people that we care the most about, which is completely illogical, except through the logic of attachment and expectations. And we have the ridiculous conception that by hurting their feelings and blaming them and making them feel awful, that then they will turn around and do what we want. Isn't that the most ridiculous expectation? Yeah? To think that by making somebody feel bad, they're going to do what you want. People usually do what we want when they feel happy and they like us. We're making them feel the opposite of that, but expecting them to come around and treat us as if we're wonderful. It's a completely ridiculous expectation, isn't it? Yeah? And yet this is how families operate by and large, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, parents with your kids, if you scream at your kids long enough and loud enough, they will do what you want, which is often true because the kids are terrified and they have no power, so they have to do it. Yeah. But if you really want to win friends and influence people, that's not a good strategy, is it? To hurt their feelings and make them feel crummy. That isn't what's going to get our, you know, fulfill our own needs. And yet, that's the strategy we use. So that's why NVC, nonviolent communication, is so useful, because it's getting us to see that there's an alternative to our completely ridiculous strategy. Yeah. 'Cause think about it, you know, the times when you've spoken harshly to somebody or exploded in anger. Has there been a happy ending to that? Yeah? You yell and scream and call them names, and they come and say, I love you so much, what shall I do to make you happy? Yeah, how many times has that happened? What do they usually say when we treat them like that?
Yeah. Sometimes they respond in kind.
Yeah, well, sometimes they fight back and deny the charges we're making. Sometimes they come up with their own charges against us. Yeah. And so have you ever noticed how with these close relationships, we often have our little mental list of everything the person's done since the last big argument? So that in case another big argument starts, we'll have some ammunition. Yeah. Like if they start an argument, then we won't be able to just sit there and go, oh, you're criticizing me, it's true. But we'll have our whole list to throw back at them. You did this, and you did this, and you did that, and then you did this. So why are you criticizing me? Why are you blaming me? What are you expecting? Don't we? Don't you? Don't you have a little list of everything they did wrong that you don't forget? Yeah. We're really rather silly human beings, aren't we? Okay, so we have to recognize the person whose feelings we want to hurt. Second part of the second part is we intend to speak those words. And third is there's an affliction. Okay, so it could be out of attachment that we speak awfully or make some, fun of somebody because we want to be accepted by a group. Yeah. Did you ever do that as a kid? Or maybe even an adult? Join in making somebody the black sheep because so that we can be accepted by the group? You know, some group is ganging up on somebody, we join in so that we're one of the group. So that could be done out of attachment. It can be done out of anger. Yeah, that's what you do when you want to get people to fight. So in the military, they teach you how to be angry. Yeah, how to overcome your fear of harming another human being. Okay. And it can also be done out of ignorance. Sometimes we think it's very chic, very fashionable, very clever, and we're very witty if we can say things to people, you know, that really hit them where it hurts. Have you ever seen people do that? Or maybe you've done it yourself? Yeah. So, you know, or just we don't care if we hurt somebody else's feelings. It doesn't matter. Okay, so that forms the motivation part. Then there's the actual doing the action. So that's speaking the words or writing the email or texting, or sign language, or smoke signals, or body gestures, you know, whatever means you use to communicate. Okay? And then the completion of the action is that the other person understands what we say and believes that you mean it. Okay? So the action isn't complete if we, like, yell and scream at an inanimate object because they don't hear it and have hurt feelings. Yeah. But I would think, you know, animals certainly would. So this one, I think, is a big one to look out for. Actually, all the speech ones, because, well, actually all 10 of these. Because if we look in our lives, you know, whenever we have problems with other people, it can usually be one form or another of these 10. Yeah? So what is it that causes the bad relationships? It's these 10 unethical actions. So here you can really see that ethical conduct, or what they used to translate as morality, isn't just something dictated from on high to us, but there's actually some wisdom and some benefit to ourselves from abandoning these kinds of actions, because you know, with time we can begin to see so clearly whenever we have problems, it's, you know, one of these involved. And very often, you know, I mean, we usually have bigger problems if it's the physical ones, but we can create some pretty big problems with the verbal ones too, don't you think? Yeah? I mean, how many hours have we spent in our life quarreling with people? And some people, really, they love quarreling. They love to have a good fight. Yeah? I think I was mentioning before, I worked with somebody who was like that, that they really got their energy and got their identity by having somebody to push against. You know, so sometimes it can be society. Oh, I don't like society. Oh, society stinks. You know, that kind of attitude, always criticizing something in society. Or it could be against another person, you know. I don't like what you're doing. I don't like this idea. I don't like it. And always pushing. Yeah. And this person loved it. Yeah? I mean, they were kind of miserable sometimes when there was a quarrel, but they really got a buzz out of it. And, you know, and I didn't participate. And that made them even madder. Yeah, because I'm the kind that withdraws. I get so angry that I withdraw. And they wanted to have a good fight. Yeah, and I'm going, how come you enjoy fighting? What do you get out of this? Yeah. It's kind of like these guys in Oregon, you know, who occupy the wildlife refuge, you know, and they're doing it, but what are they getting out of it? You know, there's just some pleasure about being obstinate and belligerent and in your face. Yeah. So we may have done that a lot as teenagers too, in the process of growing up. I'm gonna make up my own mind. Don't you try and control me, Mom and Dad. You know, I'm gonna do what I want to do and forget it. And then we went off and did whatever we wanted to do and didn't care about what happened. And sometimes we said awful things to our parents. Yeah, did you say awful things to your parents? One person saying no. How about the rest of us? How many of you said awful things to your parents? Yeah. So, yeah, so this is harsh speech. So it's a really good one to look at. And this is one that movies, you know, what do you see on movies? You know, because they have to have some action thing every few minutes, otherwise you're going to get bored. And so most of the action things, I mean, either of course they're running and chasing each other and jumping off of buildings, but aside from that, which isn't a common experience, what are they doing in a movie? They're usually quarreling and screaming at each other, aren't they? Yeah. And then we wake up and watch the movie, because look what's happening, you know. Why do we like watching people quarrel? Okay. So there's a lot to think about in this one, isn't there? Yeah? Kind of, we can go through and make an inventory.
That's a question.
Yeah?
If somebody says harsh words towards a bodhisattva or a Buddha who is not hurt by that,
Yeah, so if you speak harshly towards a Buddha or a bodhisattva, they don't respond being hurt. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll make prayers for you. But I think it's still a full action. Yeah. Oh, I'm so mad, I need to take it out on somebody. I'll go scream at a bodhisattva because then it won't be a full action. Somehow that doesn't make sense.
For completion, you said the other person hears, understands, and believes that we mean what we say. Do they have to be hurt by the action, or do they just have to know that we're trying to hurt them?
It doesn't hear, it just says they understand and believes that you, and believe that you mean what you say. Yeah, if you insult a good practitioner, maybe from their side, this is like her question, they're not going to be hurt, but from your side, you know, you wanted them to be. Okay, and the next one is idle talk. So this one is the main hindrance to spiritual practice. Isn't that interesting? Yeah, think about it. You know, what's your main hindrance to spiritual practice? It's not saying this is true for everybody. For some people, you know, sleeping too long is their main hindrance, or, you know. But idle talk, isn't idle talk a certain form of laziness? Yeah, what do? When you don't feel like practicing and you need some distraction. Yeah, you talk with somebody, you text somebody, you do something about something ridiculous to pass the time. Okay, so the object is something with no meaning or importance that you treat as if it were meaningful and important. So the object here isn't actually the other person you're speaking about. It's what you, it's the subject that you're talking about. Because actually you can create idle talk without having somebody else who listens. Like the person you were talking about who was singing the... Every time I go in the office now, but that's the kind of thing that's idle talk. Yeah. Okay. So in the second part of it, the attitude. So here first, that you think whatever you wish to say is meaningful or important. Yeah, so like I said, unlike the other non-virtues of speech, it's not necessary that there's another person we speak to. Yeah, you can talk to the wall, you can talk to the mirror, you can talk to the cats. Boy, I create a lot of talk with the cats. Really bad idle talk. aren't you cool? You see how we justify it? Okay, so, so we think whatever we're going to say is meaningful and important. We have the intention to chatter, you know, often because we're careless, we're bored, we just want something to do. Okay. And then in terms of the affliction that's present, it can be attachment, so we want to hang out and chat with somebody that we like so that we can feel like we're accepted and we belong and, you know, something like that. It could be anger, you know, because we have some really good gossip that we want to share with somebody. Yeah, or maybe we want to disturb somebody so they won't accomplish what they want to accomplish. Or maybe we're in a bad mood and we just feel like complaining. Okay. It could be ignorance, thinking that there's nothing wrong with idle talk. Okay. So when we first hear this, then we get the idea that, like, uh-oh, every time you talk to somebody, it has to be some deep, meaningful Dharma conversation, you know? So you can't just go to the grocery store and say, hi, how are you? And those peas look really good. You have to say, you know, are the peas produced from self? You know, both causes. Yeah. Are they momentary or are they permanent? Because they look for, like, peas from one moment to the next, but part of them is impermanent because they change, you know. And so you have to have this kind of discussion, you know, either at the grocery store or maybe at the gas station, and, you know. And then you go to the bank and, you know, to cash a check. And, you know, this money is just merely, its value is merely fabricated in your mind. You know, 50, 100, merely fabricated, you know, don't you agree? And have that kind of discussion with the bank teller. So don't get that kind of idea. I mean, we have to communicate over practical things. We have to, you know, communicate about lots of stuff. There's nothing wrong with that, okay? And there are certain situations where just kind of sitting around and hanging out with somebody, you can do with a motivation to benefit them. Yeah. So if somebody is coming to you and they feel really rotten, sometimes just sitting and chatting with them, not about anything in particular, or maybe about something that interests them, you know, can help pull them out of their bad mood. So and certainly when you go to work, you can't have some meaningful discussion, you know, with your colleagues. You have to chit-chat because that creates a friendly atmosphere at the workplace. So if you do those kind of things, but you're very clear what your motivation is, and you're also very clear that the chit-chat doesn't turn into gossiping about somebody else at the office. Yeah, because that's very easy to happen. You start talking about one thing and then it goes into, you know, well, did you see that person at that desk and what did they do? And I think this and that, and their marriage and their job and their this and that, you know? So don't let it devolve in that way, okay? But there can be times just to sit and chat with people. You know, there's some people who really don't know how to have meaningful discussions. They really don't. And so you just, you know, when you need to talk with them and to create a relationship, then you just talk about whatever interests them or whatever. But again, making sure that it doesn't turn into speech that is gossiping about another person or putting somebody else down or whatever, you know, or increasing somebody's attachment. You know, so like sometimes you see relatives who you haven't seen in a while. So then you spend, or friends you haven't seen in a while, so you spend some time hearing what everybody else in the family's doing. You know, because you care and you're curious, and that's what you do with your relatives or with your friends. That's fine. But then when it gets to, you know, kind of, well, you know, so-and-so's divorcing their husband, and then they're doing this and that and the other thing, and this person's always been blah, 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 and, you know, it gets into really blaming somebody, then you don't want to let it go there. Okay? So then the action is speaking unnecessary words. Okay? So here, like I said, you know, you have to be quite aware of your motivation, what you're doing. Yeah? So there's lots of different ways in which we can speak unnecessary words. So one is untrue or untrue nonsense, okay? So, you know, we invent tall tales about what other people are doing or exaggerate their behavior and sit and talk about it. Also included in untrue or perverse nonsense is legends and myths that have no redeeming purpose. Prayers to, you know, gods of other religions, religious myths, incanting spells, praying for terrible things to happen to somebody, yeah, reading non-Buddhist texts for no good, you know, without a good reason. So, you know, this is kind of the untrue nonsense that's idle talk. Then there's worldly stories and gossip. You know, that's what we do a lot, you know, different stories about different people. Then there's true nonsense, okay? So, you know what's included under true nonsense is when you're reciting your prayers without focusing on the meaning. His Holiness said this at the Long Room Teachings this year, you know? When you're just doing your recitations and you're not focusing on the meaning, it becomes idle talk. Okay? Also teaching Dharma to someone with no interest or no respect. Yeah, so somebody who doesn't want to hear the Dharma, who isn't interested, who doesn't respect, but we feel like, by golly, you know, we're going to turn them into a Buddhist. And so we start preaching at them. Yeah, that's idle talk. The person doesn't want it, doesn't mean anything to them. Okay, also other forms of idle talk, bickering. Yeah, you often see this in people who have been married for a while, that they love to bicker. Yeah? You know, they really get some pleasure out of bickering because they don't know how to speak nicely to each other. Yeah? And actually, the bickering makes them miserable. It doesn't really make them give them pleasure. But it's the only way they know how to communicate with each other is to bicker. Yeah? I was having dinner with a friend's family once, and I saw something start to happen with his mom or mom and dad, so I changed the subject and, you know, took it off in some other direction. And my friend commented on it later, and he said, "Boy, you know, you were so skillful because they've had this kind of bickering argument I don't know how many times." And I said, "Actually, I'm not so skillful. I just know from experience." Yeah. That it's best just, you know, when people are starting to bicker, just take one word of what one of them said and then make that, turn it into a subject that goes into another direction. Yeah, so they're starting to bicker about the peas, you know, if the peas are too hot or the peas are too cold. So instead of letting them sit there and go back and forth about this, you know, while you're getting a stomachache. You say, oh, you know, I have a friend who likes to grow peas, you know. I notice you have a garden out there. Do you ever grow the peas in your garden? What do you grow in your garden? And take the conversation off somewhere else. Okay? So, bickering, speaking behind someone's back, being argumentative. Yeah? You met people, maybe you're one of them, somebody says purple and you say pink. Somebody else says green and you say blue, because you love to, you know, not agree. Whoever they're there for, in, whoever they're going to vote for, even if it's the person you're inclined to, you'll talk about somebody else. Yeah? Okay, then reciting liturgies of other religions for no good reason. So sometimes, of course, we go to interfaith things and, you know, I try and be careful at interfaith things and, you know, test the waters, see if it's saying something that I don't believe is true, then I don't say it. And I try and make sure that my guests are understanding why I'm not saying it. But if it's saying something that I can say because I believe it's true, then yeah, it's fine. Okay? Repeating jingles and slogans. Yeah? Do these come up in your meditation? M-I-C-K. Or the ants go marching two by two. Or what else? What else did we learn?
Hokey pokey.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Do the hokey pokey. Yeah, so all these kinds of things. So now you all have some good meditation sessions. Okay, then also other kinds of idle talk, complaining and grumbling. Yeah, this is my favorite one. Somebody did this, somebody did that. Why is it like this? Why is it like that? Why don't you get this? Anybody else like to grumble? Yeah? Okay, so complaining and grumbling. Joking, being silly. Yeah. But, you know, there are good times for that. Like when we do skits. Yeah? There's a time and place for skits. So. I keep having this recurring image of the skit with you on the... That was good. Okay, so there's time for laughing and joking, and very often, you know, if somebody's having a hard time, if we can find a way to laugh and joke about it, or, you know, it can be very helpful. Singing, humming, whistling for no positive reason. Okay, telling stories and gossiping about government leaders. Well, Trump isn't a government leader. So, you know, can't I tell stories and gossip about him? Yeah? Okay. I mean, we should have good political discourse. You know, we need some kind of exchange of ideas, okay? But I must admit, personally, I think it's an American habit, or at least it was in my family, that we love to make fun of politicians. Is it that way for you? You know, to make fun of them, to put them down. You know, people on Wall Street, same way. Yeah. So it's probably not so good, but, well, it's our culture. No, but it is. It's not a good habit. Okay, so talking about government leaders, celebrities. Did you see what they wore to the Emmys or to the Oscars? Okay, Emmys, Oscars. How about Hermans? Yeah, don't they have some other pageant? Oh, the Super Bowl's coming up. The Super Bowl. Yeah, isn't it coming up?
Yes.
Yeah, you get some big bowl of spaghetti. It's a Super Bowl of spaghetti. I mean, you just keep hearing about the Super Bowl. Yeah? So, sports, political affairs, wars, crimes when we're unable to affect or improve the situation. So these are the topics that we do need to talk about and have serious conversations about, but when they turn into just idle talk, you know, and just gossip and putting people down and making fun of people, that we want to stop. Speaking like a drunk or a crazy person. Speaking stupidly, that's a form of idle gossip too. Okay. Talking in connection with the five wrong livelihoods. Okay, so speech in which you're flattering people, hinting to get something, coercing someone. Yeah, being hypocritical, pretending to be very highly spiritual, you know, so that somebody will make an offering to you or something like that. Okay, then the action is speaking any words or writing or texting any of these things in this way. And then, you know, the completion is you're done with what you're saying. So nobody has to hear it. Like I said, you can talk to the wall, you can scream at the machine. I'm sure many people scream at their computers. Okay. Again, and what's very serious is to distract somebody who's trying to practice. So we need to be careful about that one, you know, because I've had it happen when I wanted to go study or, you know, do a session or something. And there's somebody who just wants to talk about nothing. Yeah, so you have to find some way to extricate yourself politely. But we should be careful that we don't become the person like that. Okay, any comments about that one? About idle talk, yeah?
So when we're doing medicine here, you know, everybody's doing their own prayers, if somebody sits down to do their bowl and is going to do their prayers and people are sitting there talking across, is that pretty much keeping somebody from practicing?
Yeah, I think it's better, you know, at medicine, you know, when people offer their food, if somebody's offering at your table, just to be quiet and give them the space to offer.
The one about praying for something terrible to happen to someone really sounds like malice and ill will rather than idle.
Well, malice and ill will is a mental one. That's mental, so that's going to come first. And then it's going to produce this. But this could be also harsh speech, you know, wanting, you know, praying for something bad to happen to somebody.
But just as we were talking about all the examples for idle talk, it seems all the more a reason to stay away from the news, because these days news is no longer reported except in this kind of way. Mm-hmm. You know, the entertainment news that's become.
Yeah. Yeah, very often the news is presented in the form of entertainment, or it's presented in a way that's designed to get us all riled up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a difficult thing, because we need to know something about what's going on in the world. Yeah. But we need to also not let our mind be affected by it and get riled up and then, you know, want to gossip about it and talk about it here and there. You know, if you listen to the news like you're looking at a Karma magazine, yeah, this is a bulletin all about karma and what people, you know, what kind of results they're experiencing, and you can think of the actions they created, and then you can look at what they're doing right now and think of, you know, what are the afflictions involved in that, what kind of results are they creating the causes for it. But to just read the news and then just idle chatter is about it. Yeah. Or talking about sales. This is another thing, talking about shopping and where the best sales are and where you can go and get this and that. You know, some people can talk about that for a long time. Also talking about food. Yeah? My family, when you want to go out to dinner, you spend half an hour talking about the food before you even order. Yeah? It's so boring. Yeah? When you're used to just what's ever on the table, that's what you eat. And then, you know, somebody invites you out and they spend so long talking about what to eat. Yeah, but people love talking about food. Okay, that's a form of idle talk too. What restaurant to go to, you know, what kind of food the restaurant makes. If you can have them make this dish, but add in a little bit of that, and take out a little bit of the other thing. Yeah, and can they give you a 2/3 portion instead of a full portion, and but you'll see a lot of idle talk is basically because people don't know how to really, they don't think a lot about different things. Yeah? They don't think about the world. They don't think much about things that are important. So then they just talk about all this kind of stuff. Also, talking about what's movies and TV shows. Yeah. One person was telling me that, you know, the people at where he works, they all watch some kind of soap opera. And it just drives him crazy because I guess it happens during lunch break. And so all afternoon they're talking about the scene from the soap opera. And he's like bored stiff. And, he wants to talk with his colleagues, but that's all they talk about. Okay, so that kind of talk too. Yeah?
Yeah, I think we learned it from very early on. My mom, when I was 7 or 8, to learn that I had to learn to communicate with my classmates upon music and stars, otherwise you have been left out. So I had to learn to think that way, to be kind of included if
yeah,
I wanted to.
Right.
Yeah, so and then it continues, of course.
Yes.
Habituated.
Yeah, yeah, because we want to be included in groups, mm-hmm. So we learn what they talk about and talk about those things. Yeah. Yeah. So it sometimes can be really challenging for people at work to figure out how to talk to the people they work with. Yeah. Yeah, when they're talking about, let's say, a soap opera all the time, and or the, you know, they're talking about the Super Bowl or the whatever bowls they're having. Yeah, there's the Rose Bowl and the Super Bowl and, you know, the Rose Parade. And, you know, people talking about all that kind of stuff. Okay, so we often do it because we want to be accepted. What's better if we're going to do it with the motivation to bring other people in and create a relationship? Yeah. Or if, you know, not to do it with a motivation so that those people will like us and will belong. You know, unless we want to, you know, be with those people with some attitude of benefiting them. I mean, for example, when I, the first time I met Kyamchi Zopa Rinpoche was at Los Angeles International Airport. I drove somebody out to meet him. And he talked to me about dolphins. He had just come from Hawaii and seen some kind of, I don't know, show about all the, you know, SeaWorld kind of show. So he talked to me about dolphins. Yeah, that was his skillful means, and that illustrated the level of my mind. Yeah?
Oh. Huh? You're talking with me about cats.
Yeah, okay. Is a good way to connect to people. Some people like to talk about dogs. Yeah. You know, but it's true, you know, if you're taking a walk and you want to be friendly to people, you talk about their dog, you know, when they're walking their dog.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about, what if you have to talk about some of these topics because of work? Like, I was, like, designing restaurants, so we were talking about food and all
of
this stuff.
Yeah.
Is that also idle talk?
Well, no, you're doing it for your work. You're doing it for some purpose. Yeah. I mean, if you're designing restaurants, and so you have to talk about what kind of food is served and how they serve it, you're doing that for the purpose of your work. Yeah. Then the other question is, you know, what is the redeeming value of your work? But we won't talk about that. Right. Yeah, if you're designing, you know, if you're the architect for a news station, then you have to talk about some of these
things. I'm saying other lines of work.
Uh-huh.
Like you're a newscaster.
Right, if you're a newscaster. Yeah. Yeah, so it actually makes us think a lot about our job and the job we choose. Yeah. Because some people tell me that, oh, you know, my job is entails lying or, you know, going out and drinking. You know, some of my friends in Singapore said when they do business in China, you know, you have to go out and drink. I know in the US it's very popular. And also in China, you give somebody a present. That's how you, it's baksheesh, you know. It's basically bribes, but it's done under the guise of giving somebody a present. And this is how you close business deals. Right? Yeah? I had a friend who was doing business in China and told me all about it, you know? So then you really have to think about, you know, what kind of work am I choosing to do? Yeah?
Someone online says, as a monastic, I find it tricky because I want to put people at ease, but then sometimes they don't like it if I laugh or make a joke. I guess if my motivation is okay, it doesn't matter.
Okay, so they want to put people at ease, but they don't want a joke or do want a joke?
I think it's their role as a monastic, so they're trying to put someone at ease, but then the other person doesn't like it when the monastic is joking or laughing.
Oh, okay. So if as a monastic you want to put somebody at ease, So you try and laugh and joke, but the other person doesn't like it. Then, you know, you're obviously using the wrong technique to put them at ease. You know, this is, you're talking to somebody who has a different expectation of monastics, maybe wanting them to be more serious or more thoughtful. And so for the people who have that kind of expectation, then we should, you know, act more serious and more thoughtful. And I think as monastics too, to really choose, you know, when we joke and laugh and with who we joke and laugh, because it can often deteriorate into just being friends and having a joking, laughing, gossip session with people. So we have to really see what the situation is. But it's good to try and tune in, you know, because different cultures have different expectations of how monastics should act. That doesn't mean that you always have to fulfill those expectations, you know. But we should have them in mind as monastics and try and act in ways that inspire other people. But at the same time, you know, to be ourselves. Now, sometimes, I mean, in the West, people don't know very much about monastic life. So they think, oh, it's lovely if you laugh and talk and sing and dance. And what a nice monastic, they're so playful, this and this and this. But I don't think that that's a real good strategy for bringing people in, because it winds up deteriorating your own practice and wasting a lot of time. Yeah, so I would rather, you know, be pleasant and, you know, you can laugh and everything. But don't have to go overboard and join in with a group of lay people who are going out to dinner and just, you know, talking about whatever or saying whatever.
Mm-hmm. For me, it seems like a lot of these, when I kind of get overboard in something, often it's internally there's some adrenaline that's kind of fueling, mm-hmm. and that comes from all the conditioning from, seems like from like TV and all of that stuff where yeah. to get a hit of something. And so to kind of pay attention to what, you know, what's going on inside, mm-hmm. so that I keep my balance.
Okay, so you're saying when you get out of balance and start being true, you know, that a lot of it, I mean, that there's a physical element with the adrenaline too, and there's a lot of habit energy behind it. Yeah. Yeah, so to be careful with that.
I was thinking about why it can be a main hindrance to spiritual practice, and it seems like, because we're just talking about topics that can increase our attachment to samsara and our concern with worldly affairs.
Yeah. Yeah, so why is it a hindrance to Dharma practice? It increases attachment, it increases our involvement with worldly affairs, and it takes up a lot of time. Idle thought takes up a huge amount of time. And we should, you know, whenever we hear ourselves saying, I don't have time to do da 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 da, we should stop and spend a couple of days just writing down what we do from what time to what time, and watch how much time we spend in idle talk. Yeah, it's really rather amazing. You know, it's a very interesting exercise to write down, you know, even like 2 minutes spent chatting to someone, and to see how much time goes through that. And then, of course, when you do sit down to, let's say, meditate, you're thinking about whatever your idle talk was about. Yeah, so it becomes doubly distracting. So next week we'll do the next three. we're all here. Okay. So this is, you know, one of the reasons we keep silent during retreat is to save on time, to prevent from having to think about these things during our meditation sessions, and also to realize that we don't need to create a personality, because a lot of our idle talk is we're creating a personality, presenting ourselves in a certain way so that people will treat us in a certain way or think a certain way about us. And so this is what we usually do whenever we meet a new person, is we both talk about our background, what we like, what we don't like, you know, what work you do. You create an identity. So it's very good in retreat, you know, when, you know, we have no idea what people's professions are, whether they're in a relationship or not, whether, you know, we don't know any of these things. All we know is that they're a Dharma practitioner. And so it frees us from having to create those personalities, and it frees us from having to put people into compartments by listening to the personalities they're creating. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking with harsh speech, if it's like you're not a complete karma without the intention, without just being like kind of snapped at someone, and would that be an example of it, like without the intention, or?
You mean doing harsh speech without the intention? And there's usually, you know, an intention.
That's what I thought. So just like, is there an example for? Because going through and trying to see how.
Well, I mean, there's usually an intention. What it could be is we have no idea that something is a touchy subject for somebody. Yeah. And so we're talking about something that they happen to be very sensitive about, but we have no clue that they're sensitive about that. Okay. But that's not really harsh speech on our side, because we have no intention to hurt them. Okay? So remember, all of these, there's the intention to do it, yeah, for it to be a complete action. The usual parts where that make it not complete is if you don't identify the object correctly, if you stop yourself before you do the action, if you don't complete the action, if you're doing it with some kind of regret because you forced into it. Those are the kinds of things that would make an action incomplete. Okay, so we'll stop here.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Lhotse's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the 3 worlds always increase. Idam Guratna Mandala Kandriyataya.
This merit,
may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore in the snowy mountain pure land. You're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chenrezi. May you stay until samsara ends.
May the deeds of
explaining and practicing the Dharma done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially at Shravasti Abbey in the West. Lord,